Life is so much more than a diagnosis. It's about sharing time with those you love, hanging with friends who lift you up, and experiencing all those moments that bring you joy. All hits, no skips. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. So long live singing to the oldies, jamming out to something new, and everything in between.
Brought to you in part by DryPro.
A Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Good morning, Dave Doval. How are you?
I'm good, my friend. How are you?
Everything's good. Everything's good. Life is good. Ready to rock and roll through 2 hours of home improvement. For the Labor Day weekend edition. The Labor Day weekend edition, let me give you a list of the things that we will do that are special, unique, and totally out of the ordinary for the Labor Day weekend edition of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Boy, that's a
okay.
Big list.
Got that taken care of. Hey, totally off topic. I was listening to the best of Bo Thompson and Beth. I had no idea that they reopened North Wilkesboro, the track, the NASCAR track.
How about that?
When did that happen?
I don't know. I didn't follow.
They were saying, well, I'm not either, but. I've done like the very first thing that I ever did when I moved to Charlotte in 1984. Barb and I, we weren't even there yet. And there was an event at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So really the first thing we ever did in Charlotte, North Carolina, other than spend a night at the Cricket Inn on Archdale Road, I don't think that's still around anymore, but was attend an event that was the Coca-Cola 600, I think at the time. And I went to North Wilkesboro later on with, do you remember Mike Jeffries?
Yeah.
Anyway, he was crazy NASCAR fan, and North Wilkesboro was pretty amazing track. I thought, like, you sat there and you felt things hit your face. You weren't sure if it's pieces of rubber, pieces of the car, or pieces of the track, but you were right in the race for sure. Anyway, sorry for that sidebar. So welcome, everybody. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're not talking NASCAR because I can barely spell it. But we'll talk about home improvement, and which is even more words. I can't spell that for sure, but we know lots about it. And we'll talk about what's important to you if you call us at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Happy to talk about your home improvement questions. This week, we're going to do a review. I won't go through all of the different things, but I have a stack, I think, of 13, because that's a lucky number, 13 tips of the week from, I don't know, whenever, all the way back into 2000. There might be some 2006 in here. There's some 2007. It's always fun to go back and look and see, is the advice that we shared, what is that, 7 less 20, so 13, no, 22, so 15 years ago, is the advice of 15 years ago still relevant? So we'll take a look at that and see, let you guys weigh in. The first one I'm looking at, you could argue it's still true, but I hope we've progressed a little bit farther in some of the applications inside of our homes. It's a plumbing deal. And then, David, we had not touched paint in a long time. We're not going to go deep into it. I'm actually saving that. I had a great conversation with one of the folks from Behr at an event we did about a month ago, and she shared some things about design and trends and color trends, and there's the technical side of application and prep and all that stuff, and we can talk a little bit about that, but I would love to have her on or one of her folks just to talk about kind of color trends and stuff like that, because Barb will tell you, with the exception of my selection of spouses, all my taste is in my mouth. And I don't think I'm alone out there, that there's a lot of folks who would benefit from from some good advice that way. So we'll talk about that. And then of course we've got our Home Depot tip of the week. What is the mail email? How is that? Have you been busy, slow? What's that
It's
world looking like?
been it was you know we've it just kind of comes in waves. But this week has been slow, but the week before was busy. So it is, I think we got one or two that I haven't answered, but we got one right here that we can answer.
Yeah, let's get Sean. Good morning, Sean. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you this morning? Hey, Sean, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, we got you now.
Okay, good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
How can we help?
I'm wondering if you could talk about HVAC units. I have two different questions I'm wondering if you could address. The first one is, we did install a new HVAC unit in our house a few months ago, and the question really revolves around what is your experience with these two-stage, compressor units with, a variable speed fan. In my case, the variable speed fan is actually on the air handler in the furnace. We installed it, and I guess there's some, mild benefits to it, but I'm wondering if, just from what y'all know, what has been your experience with that? Is it something that a lot of people find very useful or not so? That's question number one. Question number two is sort of related. The people we've talked to, we have a two-story house, and they basically, everybody we talked to recommended going with, a two-ton unit on both the upstairs and downstairs, which is the way that the house was originally supplied. My analysis is, measuring the power that the units draw and watching how much each of the units is on, is that the upstairs unit seems to provide about anywhere from 50% to two-thirds of the actual cooling into the house. And so that seems to me that it would make sense to have actually a smaller unit on the downstairs. So I'm just wondering if, those are some topics that y'all could give me some feedback on based on, your knowledge and experience.
We can truly do that. Sean, if you don't mind, if you've got a minute, we have slipped past a break here, or we're just right up on a break. And rather than spend 3 or 4 minutes, deep into the past the break, if you don't mind, we'll put you on hold and then we'll come right back and answer your questions. You cool with that?
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Hang tight, everybody. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back to answer Sean's questions and many more right after these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're going to jump right back on the line and talk to Sean. Good morning, Sean, again. Thank you for waiting through the break. You had a couple questions for us. Just to recap real quick, you just put some new HVAC systems in your house, two-ton unit upstairs, two-ton downstairs, and you have a variable fan speed feature on the air exchange unit. And so first question, I think, was our opinion and value or benefits from the variable speed fan. And I understand that to be different from the variable speed compressor. You just have the variable speed fan feature. Is that correct, Sean?
Yeah, we have a variable speed fan in the air handler, but at the compressor on the new unit, which is upstairs, is two-stage. So it's really
two-stage.
Two-stage.
Okay, got it.
What is different from the downstairs unit.
All right. So, David, you have at least that in the home that you built. And I think your feedback was pretty positive with respect to the benefits. Am I right?
It is. And it's because it gives you the opportunity with the multi-stage to dehumidify. So once the thermostat's satisfied on temperature, our unit drops back down speed and the compressor. And it continues to dehumidify in the background, so it's barely moving air, and it's also the unit outside is barely moving the fans. Just so when I first saw it, I thought something was wrong with it. I was like, oh no, it's a brand new system, but no, that's how it operates. So I think they figured it out. I can tell you this much, Sean. My power bill And I talk about this every once in a while, usually every after I get the bill every month, but I've never been over $155 or something in that area for the house that we built. And we're cooling, you know, 3,000 square feet, and it is awesome.
Thank you. And our power bill is going down too. So I think the energy efficiency aspect is definitely there with the system we bought. I guess my follow up question would be, have you noticed, I know you talked about, you know, the compressor and the fan, you know, slowing down after it hits the set point. But have you noticed a difference like in the quality of the comfort inside your home? I mean, do you see a change from what you had before?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, this was a new house, but going back to some of the other places that I lived with just a straight gas furnace and a straight HVAC system, you know, it was either on and getting after it as hard as it could go, or it was off. Right. So there's definitely some differences, but our house is always comfortable. It doesn't matter. We don't turn our heat up very high in the winter, just because we're not fans of real warm temperatures in the house. So, and we don't like the drying effect, but, in the summer, I mean, it's just comfortable all the time. You know, it's
Sean,
shorts and t-shirts, right?
Yeah. Sean, I think there's a question, a follow-up question for you, I guess, but if you have this variable speed, you eliminate the scenario where the thermostat registers that the rooms are cool enough and shuts down. And then the rooms have to get hot a couple degrees more, and then the system kicks on again, and then it gets cool and then it kicks off. And what the variable speed should do is keep that steady, right? So you shouldn't get, that like you'll be laying in bed in the older system and it's like all of a sudden it's hot, and then just about the time you're thinking it's getting a little warm in here, then the system kicks on, right? That scenario should be eliminated. I think the question is, it's great that you ask us, you know, how are we feeling about it, but you just put it in your house. How are you feeling about it?
I guess that's really what prompted the question. I mean, I think the change is pretty subtle and almost unnoticeable. Like, I can tell just because I'm watching, I pay attention to it, and I know there's an app that comes with the HVAC unit, so I can once in a while look at it and see when the compressor is cycling to the different stages. But the difference is so small that I don't really see that big of an impact. Again, I do see an impact in the efficiency, but, you know, we bought a 16-tier system, and the older one on the upstairs, which is the one we replaced, was, you know, they told me it was the original equipment, so it was 8 or 10-tier, but I guess I'm just not seeing that big a difference in the quality of the air. I bought this little humidity meter just to see how it was responding, and it keeps it anywhere from, like, 53% to 55% humidity. I was just trying to figure out, you know, what was happening, and I don't see that big an impact outside of the efficiency.
Well, okay. I think that there can be more with the technology that they have, and that's what our unit. I think the units that are at my house are like 60 some stages, so that fan can ramp up to ridiculous speeds, and then it can drop down. And I think that's the difference in our house, is that it's continually running in the background. And then we have a mini split that we have in an upstairs room that it actually never shuts off, which I thought there was something wrong with it at first, but it does that too. And it drops way down in speed, compressor and the fan. So, you know, I guess the answer to that is that you were on the way to it, but I think as you step up and sear, I think you find that there's actually more benefit, and I think our system's 21 or 22 SEER we installed. So it's
I'm sorry. So you have a fully variable speed, both air handler fan and the compressor itself,
furnace as well. So yes, all of them. And I don't think our gas bill had ever been over $75. since we've been there. So it's
Sean. I get the question that you're asking. I think a couple things real quick, and then we'll talk about the size of the units upstairs and downstairs. But if you're not uncomfortable in the scenario you have, it sounds like you made a really wise investment, and you're reaping the benefits and energy efficiency. You did not invest in the most complex and most sophisticated. So in psychology perception, they have a JND, a just noticeable difference. And it's kind of like if you're in a dark room and you light a flashlight, it's like, wow, that's huge. If you're standing, down at in the middle of a football game, 50-yard line at a night game down with the Panthers, and you turn that same flashlight on, who knows, right? Because it's there's not a noticeable difference. So it may be that you've got some benefits there, but it's not so radical. And the benefit is in the energy savings that you're, as long as you're not uncomfortable. With a couple minutes, I'm sorry.
There's definitely some energy efficiency benefits. I guess the problem for me is, I'm freezing at 72 degrees with the old system and the new system. But my wife, liked it that cold. So I was sort of hoping the new system would help with that, such that we could control the humidity a little bit better and raise the set point up, the temperature set point up, and we would both be a little feel comfortable, but it hasn't really quite worked out that way.
No, it sounds like if it's holding the temperature or the humidity, as you say, it is within a couple percentage points of relative humidity, it sounds like it's doing what it's supposed to do. We have the same challenge in our house, Sean. But it's just the opposite. I would like to take a deep breath and just feel the chill in my nostrils. Yeah. And Barb's not quite ready for all that. So I don't know that that's a function of our HVAC system. I do want to address your second question before we have to hit another break. And that was, you said you had a 2-ton unit up and a 2-ton unit down, and you were looking at the app, and you could see what was doing. And certainly the upstairs was doing most of the cooling, which is what you would expect. Heat rises. Your question, I think, was 2-ton too big for downstairs? Your installer should have done a load calculation. I think it's actually required by code. But as long as that system downstairs isn't cycling, in other words, it comes on, runs a few minutes, and then cuts off, comes on, runs a few minutes, and cuts off. If it's not doing that, you're probably sized okay. And I would suspect that the folks who installed it did the right thing for you. We've got to put you on hold again, Sean. You can decide whether you want to hang through the break or not, but we're going to take a little break here. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Great questions from Sean. You can get great questions answered at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about whatever home improvement questions are on your mind when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We are available at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Before we go to the phones, and I want to talk about our product of the week, our Home Depot product of the week. I couldn't wait. I couldn't resist. Normally, I do the tool things like around Father's Day and around Christmas, but this is good stuff, Maynard. It is our product of the week is the Milwaukee M18 18-volt brushless cordless hammer drill and impact driver kit. I love the combo kits, and they get better every time, but this is a Milwaukee product. It's 18-volt. David, I think you've used some of these. What I like about it is the brushless, it's cordless, it's a hammer drill. It's probably me just projecting, but I bring my cordless drill on every job site, and then if I've got to do a hammer drill, I've got to bring my corded hammer drill, and gee, that's a terrible inconvenience. I guess I'm spoiled. But just having the same battery drive your regular drill, your hammer drill, and this is actually an impact driver. So again, if you've never used an impact driver to drive lag screws or any of a number of just high torque jobs, it is like amazing. It's a tool you can't believe you live without until that point. So let me stop yammering M18 fuel. It comes with two batteries. That's the other thing I like about this combo. Sometimes you get, you know, one battery, or but you get two batteries, a charger, and it's not going to break the bank. It's not the least expensive tool you're going to get, but for just under $400, you've got two awesome, powerful tools. And David, I think you can test, or you would attest to the quality and oomph, to use a technical term, of the Milwaukee tools. Yeah.
Outstanding. They're
pretty great. Pretty great. Very good. That's it. That's our tool of the week. Our product of the week. See, it's got tools in my brain. It's our Home Depot product of the week. The M18, 18 volt brushless cordless hammer drill and impact driver combo kit. Super deal. All right. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110, and has dialed that number up. And here she is. Ann, good morning. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. I was calling regarding a, I was in my apartment, and I guess upstairs they were installing granite countertop in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the laundry room. I didn't realize there was water pouring out from the ceiling. So I took a cane and, like, pounded up on the ceiling. And, like, the water just kept coming down for them to stop whatever they're doing. So it kind of flooded my bathroom. And then I cleaned that up. And then yesterday, that was about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago. And then yesterday, I was on my phone, and I'm hearing, like, water dripping. And I said, hold on a minute. And I looked in the bathroom. There was no water. I looked in my bedroom, no water. And apparently, it was in the ceiling. And it was just, like, it was loud enough for me to hear, but there was no water coming in anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then it stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what that was all about.
Well, just a couple things on the water actually coming through the ceiling. I mean, I'm glad that it was repaired.
One time when they installed the granite countertop upstairs, and they said, oh, that's normal. And I said, it's normal for water to be flooding my bathroom? I don't know.
No, that's not normal. My concern, it sounds like you're in an apartment complex.
Yes.
And you would just want to make sure that they dried that out. And you don't have mold issues, right? And I would think that the landlord would be very interested in making that happen, because when you move and someone else comes in, they still have a mold issue if they haven't, you know, mitigated that. So I'm hoping that they have done that correctly.
Well,
I think, David,
water.
I'm sorry?
They just shut the water off upstairs, because I said, well, what are you going to do about it? He goes, well, I shut the water off upstairs. Nothing else should go wrong. So I just emptied the bucket of water. And then cleaned up, mopped up the floor with about 40 pounds of 5 beach towels. So,
well, yeah. So I think just keep an eye on it, and if you hear it dripping more, or you hear the water, or of course if you see it, then you know that there's a problem. That's
the ceiling. Well, right now, just like what I heard was, and loud enough for, it was like somebody running a faucet and the water was not coming through the ceiling, but it was going somewhere.
So it's possible.
And that lasted about maybe 5-6 minutes, and then that was the end of it.
Right.
So it's possible, Ann. So pay attention and look for water spots on the ceiling. But we've had callers before call us in their own homes and say, hey, I hear this dripping. I can't tell where it's going or what's happening, and it's freaking me out. Sometimes when hot water is turned on, the pipe, the PVC or the copper pipe, will expand. And if it's not tight and it's clamps, it'll actually make a ticking sound that sounds exactly like dripping until the pipe is all the way hot, and then it stops. And then sometimes as it cools down, it will tick again like that, and it sounds exactly like a drip. So it's entirely possible that it's just a hot water line expanding and contracting. But because of your prior experience, I think you want to keep an eye out to make sure there's no additional wet marks in the ceiling, because if it consistently drips, and it is truly a leak, then it will manifest in the ceiling or a wall somewhere, and you should be able to tell that. But it's possible that the dripping you hear may not be a leak. It may be a hot water pipe expanding or contracting.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like I haven't heard after the granite countertop, I haven't heard anything. And then just yesterday. So it was just yesterday that I heard the dripping.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, just so keep an eye on it.
The air conditioner. And I said, well, no, I don't know. Maybe they run the air conditioner upstairs, but I didn't know.
Well, you should be good. Just keep an eye out for it, I think you'll be fine as long as you know that it's not pouring through the ceiling again. And that was probably just a valve that was left open. And then they turned it off real quick. So. Not usually a big problem for mold unless it's a continual
leak, right?
Right. So that's what you want to keep an eye on.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Have a safe holiday.
You too.
Thank you. Have a great one, Ann. Appreciate your call. All right, folks, we're going to sneak away for another break. 704-570-1110 is the number. Call us when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dovall.
We've got some lines open. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Let's talk to Kevin. Kevin, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys this morning?
Great.
Excellent.
Good. I had a question about ridge vent as well as gables. So we've had some bats and squirrels in over the years into the attic, which I'm sure many people do. Mm-hmm. But the last guy came out said that we could potentially close the gables up because you don't need both those gables open and the ridge vent. Could you give me some advice there on can we do that or where we're at? And I'm going to hang up so I can hear you.
Okay. First of all, hey.
Don't go hang up. Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Hey, Kevin.
Yes.
Hey, do you have soffit vents?
We do, yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. That's what we needed to know. Okay, you're good.
Awesome.
Hang up. We'll sing a song and then answer the question.
Yeah. So, the critter guy is correct. You can close up the gable vents. It says specifically in the directions for every ridge vent manufacturer. I don't know that there would be anyone that would be any different, but once you put the ridge vent on, all other ventilation should be closed off, and then the intakes, which are your soffit vents, should be plenty. You can actually have continuous strip vents or individual vents, but the more air in, the better off you are to replace the air that's going out the ridge vent. What happens when you have the gable in vents is the air will take the least path of resistance. So instead of the air being pulled from the or filling in and coming from the soffit vents, it would pull in from the gable in vents, which is only going to ventilate the top third of the attic. It's not going to do a great job. So, you could close those off. And then the way we recommend to do it is with the easiest way that I found is just to use a foil faced styrofoam, and you put that up and you use screws and washers. Don't ever try to pound nails on those vents from the inside out, because there's usually only one or two nails holding them in anyway, and they'll end up laying out in the yard. Now it depends on what the vent is, but if you use a washer, I always use a fender washer and a screw. And just put three or four screws in that in the vent. If they're the big triangle vents, you won't get one piece on to cover that entire vent. So you make it in two pieces, and then you could put a piece of foil tape over the seam. But use screws to fasten it to the structure up there. That'll close it off. And it doesn't have to be super airtight. You just want to get the bulk of it closed up, and I think that's it. And kudos to your critter guy that he knew that and he's paying attention, because there's a lot of truth in that. We've had that discussion many times here, and I've had a couple of people that wrote us notes that their roofer told the people that we were crazy.
Well, we're crazy, but we're not wrong about that.
That's right, because we actually read the directions.
stop it.
It's just one of those things, those pesky instructions. But almost every ridge vent manufacturer, you'll find that in the first few lines of the directions. So
that
makes it simple.
squirrels be gone.
Yep.
Close those vents. Good deal. All right. Let's talk to Gigi. Gigi, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Good morning, John and Dave. I got my cup of coffee, so I wanted to ask you two questions this morning.
Okay.
I have an older home in Fort Mill, two AC units, one mm-hmm. upstairs, downstairs, about 1,900 square feet. And what I notice upstairs is that when I turn on upstairs, it starts, and then about 30 seconds, it shuts off. So it's like, okay, it's kind of hot, but then mm-hmm. after a minute or two, it comes back on again, and then it stays on for the rest of the time that we want it, or the time that we set it on.
Okay.
But I don't think that's normal, that it will, you turn it on, and then about, you know, a minute or maybe 2 minutes, about maybe 30 seconds, it shuts off. And then it comes back on about a minute or two, and then it stays on, and it's cool, and it's nice.
Mm-hmm. Are you on a regular program with anyone to service your system?
Yeah, I'm just, we are with a program, and that's a very good question. I think we're going to change AC unit company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It seems
yeah.
like every time they come here, something else is wrong, you know, so we are like a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
Understand.
But I want to know what's going on. I wanted to know if you can give me some hints before somebody comes and tells me, well, maybe you need a new unit or blah, blah, blah.
No. Well, how old is the unit, first of all?
I want to say up to 10 years.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're getting close to its life expectancy. What they say, somewhere between 12 and 15 years.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So you're probably still good, especially if you've been maintaining. But you know, you never know. You just never know when one's going to go out. But
the danger for you right now, Gigi, is so you've got a unit that's 10 years old, and someone and you're a little bit skeptical because maybe you don't have the best partner for your routine maintenance. So now someone legit could come out and say, hey, it might be time to change this out. And you're like, yeah, well, I'm not sure if I believe you. At 10 years, they may or may not be right. David, it sounds like, I don't want to say like thermostat. I feel like getting like Zeke or Scott or somebody out there to take a look at it. They won't try to sell something that doesn't exist. I mean, what are your thoughts? I mean, we could speculate about a thermostat, about a limit switch. I just don't know.
Yeah, it could be any number of things. Gigi, so now would be a good time as you make your decision for a company that's going to service that equipment, mm-hmm. let them come out and take a look at that and see where that goes.
Okay.
But I agree with John. There's some glitch there. It shouldn't be doing that. When you turn that on, that system should come on and run until the thermostat is satisfied at the set point, and then it will go off, and it shouldn't come on again until it drops, you know, 1 or 2 degrees below what you have it set at.
You know, while I was writing my notes down, let me ask you one question. Sometimes we shut it off totally. You know, we shut it off. That's another subject I wanted to talk to you about. We shut it off, and then it gets too hot, so we turn the unit on.
Mm-hmm.
We shut it off entirely. We are upstairs, it gets hot, so we turn the unit back on. Could that be causing that problem, that we shut it off, we turn it on?
Well, I mean, it could be causing something with the switch on the thermostat if you're using it a lot, because I don't know if they're designed to be used like a light switch to turn on and off that many times. I don't know how often you do it, but that would be a good question.
Yeah. What would be the reason for just turning it off versus letting the thermostat turn it on and off?
Okay. Well, the reason why we do that, and that's my second question, is that our units, one of them downstairs is right next to the pool. So when we are outside, this unit is very, very loud. It's just really very uncomfortable while we're sitting outside, and this thing goes on, and it's like, sounds like...
Yeah.
Construction is just started, you know, next door.
Right. I understand. Well, it sounds, John, it sounds to me like everything Gigi's t- telling us is starting to look like it's maybe time.
It could be time.
Looking at a new unit. And there are units that are very quiet. Our system is very quiet. It's right outside of my office at home, and I can never hear it running. So there's opportunity to do that. You're 10 years old. You know, you're getting ready to get out of the cooling season here before long. So probably this fall, I would start thinking about having someone come out, maybe get a couple of prices on your system. And
hey, Gigi, we'll put you on hold for just 1 second because we're going to be right up against the break. You can send us a note at askjohnanddave.com. Click on the questions buttons if you need some more. We can share some information on who to chat with. But we've got to skedaddle to a break. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back to answer your questions right after these important messages.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back, everybody. This is hour number two of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Let's see. Let's remind everybody we are at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. David, did you get a minute with Gigi after the...
I did. We just finished up off the air, and she just was concerned, you know, obviously about the system. And I don't know what she was talking about. She said there was something you could put on the unit to quiet it down, and I'm assuming it was some type of a hood or something that someone's peddling out there, and that's pretty much a no-no. You cannot impede the air in or out of those systems. So you need room around the unit, and you need room above the unit for the air to draw air in and dissipate the heat. If you cover it up, it becomes a problem. The noise that she was having is probably, you know, it was probably the quality of the unit. And of course now it's older.
And so age. Yeah,
age is everything. I mean, listen how much I creak now, you know, so it's crazy, but you know, the bearings are probably a little looser in that thing. They're wearing out. You know, everything is probably just shaken and it's just loose. So, a newer, quiet unit, and especially because, as she said, they're out there by the swimming pool. That would be one of the things on the top of my list. You know, I would be looking for efficiency and quiet for that system. So, and that you can get those things with those systems to where you can barely hear them run, and that's really what you're after.
Those
couple of things.
And that's good. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking her off the air, because I felt like we might not have gotten everything answered quickly and correctly for her. So that's good.
Yep, and she's going to get a couple of prices as well.
Yeah, so. And I think Zeke and Scott don't pay us. But what they do is they save us a lot of headaches when we suggest someone chat that way. Or David at David Drew, right? I mean,
sure.
Another
over at NASCAR,
partner,
exactly.
NASCAR, yeah, could be a really good partner for Gigi. Okay, folks, we have lines open. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Way back at the beginning of the first hour, we said we would talk about some tips of the week from like 12 years ago. And then we also had some common painting mistakes going. We're anticipating the cooling season coming up here and getting outside to paint. People painting again, vacations and all that stuff be done kind of, I guess, sort of officially this weekend with Labor Day, although most of the school systems have been back in school for a little while. But David, what do you want to do? You want to do a tip of the week, or you want to do a painting, a mistake to avoid?
I don't know. Let me flip a coin. I don't have a coin.
All right, so I'm saying we'll do a quick tip of the week.
There you go.
And while we're doing that, 704-570-1110, I have enough to go through the rest of this hour, so I'm not worried, but you might be in case you have another question. So do give us a call. The first one I'm looking at this week's tip comes from Your seat may be worn out file. Well, my seat is dragging some days, but I don't think that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about long meetings or visits from boring in-laws. We're referring to a caller who told us that they had an old faucet that still used washers. He had replaced the washer several times in just a few months. Each time he completed the process, the leak would stop, but just a few weeks later, it would return. The solution was a little deeper in the faucet than the washer. The washer stops water from flowing by forming a seal between the stem of the faucet and what is called the seat. The seat is a smooth surface down inside the faucet. Over the years, it can develop imperfection or two, not unlike other seats we know. Oh, that's terrible. These imperfections cause the washer to wear out prematurely. The good news here is that a plastic surgeon is not required to fix this seat. Who writes these? Go to your local home improvement store, purchase a seat dressing tool. What they call that, Spanx? It will come with seal cutters. You have to purchase some to get the exactly right size. We'll stop reading this nonsense. Bottom line, David, is there's a dressing tool that kind of like is a die, right? And it'll cut and smooth out the metal surface of the seat.
Sure. So you're filing it and smoothing it out.
And then when that washer hits down, it doesn't hit little snags or imperfections in the seat, and it doesn't wear out so fast. Now, well, okay. So is that good advice or bad advice?
Well, it's good advice still if you have faucets that operate in that manner. they're fewer and far between, but they're still out there.
Unless it's an outside spigot.
Correct.
Did I say spigot?
Ooh.
Faucet. Remember, I got scolded for saying that.
Well, we both did.
It's all good. Anyway, it's still a spigot. It is. It's that thing outside. Anyway, so if it is an outside a faucet, then that design could very much be the case, right? But on the newer design faucets inside the house, you're typically not talking about that scenario. It's a cartridge. There's some things you can do with the cartridge. There might even be a tip of the week that we did on that. And who knows, it could be in the stack that I've got here. But so it is a cool little headache saver. It saves, the headache of A, lost water, B, changing washers out, and especially outside where, drips can happen and carry on for a while and not be caught or be a problem if you don't get things shut off correctly for the winter. So, all right. That's our tip of the week, number one. And holy moly, we're right up against the break already. That time goes fast. Folks, we're going to take a little break. We're going to be back to answer home improvement questions. You can call us at 704-570-1110, and we'll talk home improvement. We'll return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Dovell.
And we have lines open. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We're kind of taking a little walk down memory lane. Some tips of the week. The ones I'm looking at right now are from 2007. And so we'll have a little fun with that. It's still good information. You want to do a paint tip or a tip?
Yeah,
tip?
Let's do some paint. Talk about some painting.
So seven, and this is not our wizardry. I'm taking actually this from a magazine like Country Living, Southern Living, all those guys. They did a little deal on one of the ladies there. Did a deal on seven common painting mistakes to avoid. And interestingly enough, the very first one that they talk about or that she talks about is not storing your paint correctly. And so, if you buy it from the store and then you go put it up, that's great. Then you stick it on the shelf and, you put it there until you have about 20 or 30 gallons and then you get frustrated and you do something with it. But in reality, if you're storing it, particularly over a period of time, there's a couple of things that I think are good tips. Number one, she says, pay attention to the temperature. And it should stay between 40 and I think 95. She actually lists it in centigrade. And so I had to do the math. So I think if my math is correct, 41 degrees to 95 degrees. I think if you read the manufacturer's label, they're going to tell you to keep it above freezing. And then probably below, I guess 95, 80, 95. for protracted, you know, storage periods. The other thing that I think is really good is when you seal up, I do kind of a version of, in fact, it might even be one of the tips in the stack here, how to store drywall mud over an extended period of time so it doesn't dry out. But if you've stored paint, it'll be fine. But sometimes if you didn't get the ridges clean, or you get a little bit of dried paint in the lip of the can or whatever, and then you open it up and down into the paint it goes, and now you're trying to fish it out or filter it out or go ahead and apply it on the wall, and now you have a texture finish. there's a cool little trick that I use for a couple different things, and that is just take a piece of Saran wrap or plastic wrap and put it on the lid over the can, and then put the lid on. And that keeps stuff that, you know, dries up on the lid or you pull the lid off and you can remove the plastic and nothing falls into the paint. I wish you could see my hands. They're helping me to explain this, but it does work. That works really well, yes. Right? And it also gives you a nice, it tightens up the seal, if you will, and it just makes it that much better. So I think that's a really great tip for how to store paint correctly.
And I think too, John, is cleaning the recess in the can out before you even try to attempt to put the lid on. So what's bad about that is when you pour the paint, obviously paint's going to get in. Or if you're using the can and you're dipping your brush, which is really not the best way, you really should pour it into a smaller container. There's an old painter's story about that, because when you knock it over, not if you knock it over or it falls off the ladder, but when it falls off the ladder, you have less paint mess to clean up. So you don't ever take a whole gallon of paint up on the ladder with you. You should put smaller quantities. Plus, you don't have all that open time for the paint. It's not good for it. So
air is the worst. Air is the enemy of paint unless it's on the wall.
And have you used the little pour spouts that snap?
Those are
pretty awesome. I didn't think too much of them, but you can use them pretty much forever, because once the paint dries them, if you don't wash it off once it dries, you just peel it off if it's latex.
Exactly. There's a couple different gizmos out there. Some of the Behr paints now have the pour integral with the lid, right? Mm-hmm. I've only used that once, and I don't have an opinion one way or the other, but I do have the things that fit into the lid, or when you're using a 5 gallon, you know, the
spout that you screw on,
pour spout. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. Like, I am OCD, and like anybody that paints with me, Barb will tell you, like, John is an idiot. He's nuts. He's just terrible about cleaning brushes and cleaning the lid, the little rim. Like, I will take an extra 5 minutes to make sure I've got virtually all the paint out of that lip, because it's a pain later on that dries up. We just talked about it, right? And it's a mess. So,
well, it prevents the seal.
I think that's time well spent. Yeah, it's time well spent. All right. 704, while we're ranting, sorry, 704-570-1110. One should not get passionate about how much paint is left in the rim of the paint can. I don't know. Something's wrong here. 704-570-1110. That's our phone number. Give us a call if you want to hear something besides it. Second one is more good advice, David. It's scrimping on tools. And scrimping on tools can take any of a number of forms. Mm-hmm. One can be, well, I don't have time to run to the store to get a paintbrush, so I'm going to get this one that I did last time. And like, it's been sitting on the shelf, and you may or may not have cleaned it well. And so now as you paint, you get the, I don't know what you call it, where you get the little bristles stuck in the paint, right? And so you got that. They also, a poor brush, either an old brush or a poor quality brush, won't hold the paint.
It doesn't hold as much paint, correct.
So it takes longer, and it goes on in not so well. And so all the benefits that can come with even a quality paint for leveling and all those things, cutting edges, it's just shot just because you use the old brush or a cheesy brush. So you don't have to spend, I don't know, you can buy some very expensive brushes. That's another thing. I will spend the money on a really good brush. And that's part of the reason that I'm like an idiot cleaning it out, because I don't want to spend that money every time I want to paint. But I literally have a paintbrush I shouldn't even admit this, that belonged to my father. I still use it.
No, I agree. I have some old brushes too, so they're nice.
It's worth it. Yeah, it's worth it. Anyway, so don't scrimp out on the painting tools. What else would you talk about too? I'm not a big fan of the little edge guide, you know, to cut in, you know, the little metal piece or the trim. I'm pretty much old school, and I think you just got to cut it in. Are there two the other things that I'm not thinking about tool wise for paint?
Well, and you know, something rollers. That I do, when you talk about that little edge tool, what I've been doing for years is, you know, a lot of times after you do flooring, you end up repainting the baseboards. And then if there's quarter round or shoe mold, most of the time we'll put a coat of paint on that before we ever cut the first piece. And then we touch it up. But if you do have to paint it, what I found, John, is I use a 8 or a 10, 12 inch drywall knife, and you can usually slide it underneath the molding and you could paint, and that gives you a long stroke, and then you could move it down. You just have to wipe it off every once in a while so that you don't drag paint on the flooring. But that works really well. To be able to paint to the very bottom of the molding if you want to get it. And you're not constantly trying to wipe paint up off of the floor or spending a lot of time trying to lay down there and cut it in, because it's very hard to, it's hard to see it. Of course, if you have a good brush, it makes it much easier to cut that in. But
so that's a segue to another tip here is so you can, I believe that like painting is like physics. In the physics, there's a law of conservation of energy. It cannot be created or destroyed, only changed, right? So it's a law of conservation of time it takes to paint. It cannot be increased or decreased. That's kind of not true, but it, given the same application method, it cannot be increased or decreased, only changed. So you can take time to patiently cut it in, or you can use the tool, as you said, or you can tape. Put down masking tape, right? And use the blue painter's tape, use the good tape, or the green frog tape if you're going to make lines and stuff like that. But the next mistake that people make is when they tape to keep, you know, the paint off of other surfaces, you need to remove the tape while the paint is still wet.
Correct.
Don't wait till it dries, or as you will find out, it's stuck to the paint, it's stuck to the wall, and then chips, pieces come off because of the latex nature of the paint. So remove the tape when it's wet, do not wait until it's dry. All right. Speaking of waiting, we're going to have to take a break, so you're going to have to wait for more tips or more great information until we come back from our break. If you'd like to join us after that, 704-570-1110 is the number, 704-570-1110. We will talk more home improvement on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave when we return from these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Give us a call this morning. We've got some lines open right now. I had great calls first hour. We got lines open at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Before we take a deep dive into this next segment, I want to take a minute to talk about our Home Depot product of the week. And I shared in the first hour, I just couldn't wait. I like to talk about tool stuff at Christmas time, at Father's Day, Mother's Day, because there's plenty of spouses where the woman is the handy person in the house, and that's cool. We're down with that. But this week I want to talk about the Milwaukee M18 18 volt lithium ion brushless cordless hammer drill and impact driver combo kit. That's a mouthful, hard to say in one breath, but it's awesome. So it's the Milwaukee technology. It's the M18 fuel technology. From a battery perspective, you get two batteries with the kit. So you get a hammer drill and an impact driver. I love the idea of a hammer drill that is cordless, right? I still have, you know, my regular drill, and then I have to have a corded hammer drill. Love the cordless hammer drill. Love the 18 volt, the Milwaukee stuff. David, I think you own some of these powerful tools. If you've never driven a lag screw or something with an impact driver or had to do the into concrete with a hammer drill, it's the real deal, and it's cordless. I like it also because in this combination pack, you get two batteries. So not just one in charge back four, they get two batteries. And it's under $400. So it's not the least expensive tool you're going to buy. But depending on your age, it's probably the last tool like this that you buy because it's a super great product. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week for this week. And we've got some callers. So let's talk to Bill. Bill, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Good morning. Pushing out the back of my storage room. It used to be a carport. And how thick do I need to dig behind the, to add, say, 4 feet beyond the existing storage room? Is that a four-inch slab and dig out 8 feet, 8 inches?
David, what do you recommend for a bed? 4 inches of stone or less than that?
Well, if you're gonna if you are and you're building walls, I'm assuming, right? You're gonna, add a wall back to it, so you have to have a footing. So you'll need to dig down to solid ground a minimum of 8 inches, and you're gonna probably be deeper than that. And then you would form up outside or over top of your footing, and then you would be 4 inches of concrete on the top for your slab.
So it's two pours, right?
Well, no, you could pour a monolithic slab, so you could pour it all at once, but you have to form up. So you dig your footing, and your form would actually be kind of suspended over the footing.
Got it.
So really that's what you need, and you're digging down until it's solid ground, until you can't take a piece of flat rebar on the end and push it down in the ground. So you're looking for a footing. You want tight soil, and you have to get down in the ground a little bit to get to that soil. So you're probably going to be down in there 12, 14 inches, something like that.
Okay.
For the perimeter.
Right. For the perimeter of that, and then four inches. So you're just digging that trench that's going to be 12 inches wide around the edges. You're just going to build your walls right on top of the slab. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what you need. And then, if you want to do it a different way, you could dig a footing, pour the footing, lay brick or block, and then you pour the concrete up to the top of the brick or the block. And then you're actually building on top of the brick or the block that you're using for the foundation wall.
Okay.
So you have a couple of options there, but usually the monolithic slab, that's usually what you'll see in most houses that are on that are not sloping. So if you have a severe slope, then you probably are going to need to pour a footing and then lay some masonry.
No, it's dead level flat. That's for
okay.
Sure.
Then I think you'll be in good shape. Just try to get that up off of the ground a little bit, because technically what you're after is about 6 to 8 inches between the first wood and the dirt, and that's your okay. Termite barrier. That's what you want to keep that area, so that you can see if termites are building tunnels or coming up. It also keeps you off of the ground and keeps the water away from the framing of the wall and the siding.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate it. Love your show.
Thanks, man. Good luck.
Bill, thanks for calling. I'm a little jealous Bill gets to have a good, cool project like that. All right. Let's see. Let's talk to Jim. Jim, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Hey,
good morning.
Jim, how can we help?
Just a question about, I've heard you speak on earlier shows about the price of wood and how it went up so high. Where is that now as far as wood for rebuilding a deck?
Back down pretty close per board foot, isn't it, John?
It's to where right now. I mean, I'm not an expert on this. I used to track it almost daily, but I believe the price right now, and I'm looking at composites, right? So not composite products, but a composite for lumber, dimensional lumber in general. And you are at the price right now about where it was in July of 2018. So pre-COVID, went absolutely nuts. Yeah, you're at pre-COVID prices right now.
And then compare, just briefly, your take on the treated wood versus the Trex deck.
definitely a composite. I think for long-term longevity and ease of maintenance, a composite product like Trex or Fiberon, or there's others out there, I would say over wood. Wood is great, and sometimes you just want wood. I had some challenges with the Trex product that I purchased many years ago now. The newer versions have a PVC cap on it that eliminates some of the challenges with fading and mildew and stuff like that that were part of the original problem. But I would say dollar for dollar, it's a closer investment than you think, than sometimes the manufacturers would like you to think. But I would say a Trex, a quality composite product over wood for the long-term ease of maintenance and durability. David, I don't know if you have a different opinion.
I agree with that. I mean, you can use wood with the aid of Cedar Shield, will preserve the wood a little bit longer. So if you're trying to be budget conscious and save a little money, because there's no doubt that the composites are quite a bit more money than a 5/4 by 6 treated deck board for the top. So you could consider doing that and adding that product to the lumber as soon as you install it. You treat it and you wait 72 hours, and then you can stain it immediately, because it removes the water from the wood. So you're not setting and waiting 30 days, and you're looking at about $60 a gallon for that product. But it's well worth it because it stabilizes the wood and it keeps it from taking moisture on at a later date. So worth every penny of it. And then another quick thing, I know we gotta go to break here, but
yeah.
Just when you cover your joist, regardless of whether you use wood or a composite on top, they make flashing tape, and you should wrap the top of your deck board or your joist. I always thought that, because when you strip a deck off and you think you're going to reuse it, a lot of times it's not in very good shape underneath the board. So if you're especially going to spend money on a deck at this point in time, make sure you cover up the joist and use the flashing tape.
Flashing tape over the joist.
And you put it right over top of the joist. Yep. Look it up. If you look it up online, you'll see all types of methods out there to do it.
And then this treatment you spoke of is called?
Cedar Shield, and you'll find that at CedarSide.com. Or if you go to our website and click on the products page, you'll find a link there for it. So AskJohnAndDave.com products page, and you will find a link for Cedar Shield.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jim. Great call. Folks, we got to take a little break. 704-570-1110 is the number. Chat when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're in the final round, the lightning round for this week's show. So give us a call. We're at 704-570-1110. Right now, we're going to talk to Jerry. Good morning, Jerry. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Fine. You?
Great.
Great. How can we help?
Yes. My wife and I are older, and we're looking to change our commodes out and put in the higher commodes. And we go to the Home Depot here where we live, and we look at them, and they got about 20 up on the wall. We didn't know whether the cheaper Glacier Bay or the $300 ones, what's the best value for us?
Well,
David, I should let you talk so it doesn't sound like a self-serving interest. I mean, I have an opinion on that. What is your opinion? I don't think you got to take a second mortgage to buy a toilet.
No, I don't think you do either. And that Glacier Bay, I put two of those in our townhouse in two of the bathrooms not long before we left. Well, we'd been there a while, but just because the toilets that were in there did not flush very well. I didn't want to spend a lot of money. And at the time, those toilets were the right height toilets, elongated instead of the round front. So they're a little bit deeper, a little bit longer, and then they're taller. So they're seat height. By the time you put the toilet seat on it, it's about the same height as a dining room chair, which is a comfortable, it's a comfortable height for older adults to get up and down, including us. And that toilet flushes great. They're not showy toilets. In other words, they're not fancy. So if you're looking for fancy, that's not the toilet for you. But if you're looking for the right height and one that flushes really, really well for $100, $120, that's a great choice for a toilet. And I've put a handful of those in through the years, and I've never had a problem with them. Now, my new house, we put in the American Standard. We put in the Champion three or fours because, again, right height, they flush great. They use 1.28, I think, gallons to flush. But it's a little bit of a nicer looking toilet. And that was more important for us because you can see them, two of them anyway. But I think you can't go wrong. The Kohler Cimarron, I don't want to leave them out because they're good toilets too. It's just the price point's just a little bit higher than that Glacier Bay. So it kind of depends on where you want to go from there. And then Delta has a toilet there, and Kohler both
David,
have Glacier
David,
Bay as well.
You're giving him too many options. He's trying to narrow it down.
I know, but they also have a one-piece toilet, so that's important if cleanliness is an issue. If you don't have the tank is not separate from the bowl, that's a nice feature as well. They're heavier toilets because it's all one piece. So it takes a little bit more to install them. But I hope that helps, Jerry. I hope I didn't confuse you, but nothing wrong with the Glacier Bay toilets. That's the brand, that's the Home Depot brand toilet. And I have used them and am very happy with them. Now I will add this, John. I'm not a real big fan of the double flush or when they put the device to flush the toilet in the lid, because you have to be Gumby to flush that thing. I can't twist that far. I can reach my arm around and catch the lever on the side, but the top mount is not my, it's not my favorite design.
So Jerry, I don't know if we helped or not. I think it, so I work with property investors all day, every day, 700,000 single family homes. They buy more often than not the Glacier Bay because they want a reasonable price point. They own the home long term, so they want it to be durable and last, and they have to do the comfort height thing because that seems to be kind of the way things go. So if you want the opinion of folks who make a living investing in those kinds of things, that's the choice that they make more often than not.
What about the Glacier Bay? Would you go with the cheaper one or the middle of the line or the more expensive one?
I used the $99 ones and was very happy. I was hesitant, yep, but I was very pleased with that toilet. They're good toilets, and they flush really, really nice.
So you think the biggest difference in a Glacier Bay like that and say the American Standard is the look?
Yeah, there's a couple other little features I think that are in there too, but I don't know how important they are. So I think that's it. So sometimes when we remodel someone's bathroom, they want a fancier looking toilet, something a little more ornate. If that's not important to you, then I think that bare bones Glacier Bay, the one that you can flush with the regular handle, is a great value.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Jerry, thank you so much for your call. Just because you should know, we're talking about the Glacier Bay. I don't remember what the toilet in a box price point is anymore. It used to be under $100, but barely under $100. But just in case, there is a toilet manufactured by Toto. It's the NeoRest NX1 MS900 CUMFG. 0.8 gallons per flush, elongated chair, dual height toilet with a seat for a mere $8,745.
Wow.
You could own one of those.
Yeah, could.
or you could burn $50 bills. No, I shouldn't say that. Toto is like one of the most awesome,
yes,
manufacturers of of toys. I see that we've got Ann back. I'm afraid we're going to run out of time.
Yeah,
on
I'll
Ann.
Take Ann off the air.
Yeah, or we can get her to just shoot us a note at AskJohnAndDave.com. That's a really good resource, by the way. And I say we because David does all the hard work on this. But if you've got some questions that are where you need a little bit more information to us or a little bit more information from us, you can go to AskJohnAndDave.com, click on the questions button, and send us a question, and we can answer it that way. And hang tight. David's going to get you off the air. Folks, that wraps up another week. I hope you have an awesome Labor Day holiday weekend. It's the last big one of the summer, so enjoy it. And as we do every week, we'd like to remind you that we think that the most important kind of home improvement that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Maybe an $8,000 toilet. I'm not sure. But don't forget to work on the Make Your Home a Happier Place to Live In this week. And we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.